Last night, after the U.S. Senate voted 52-48, Judge Amy Coney Barrett was sworn in as a justice on the U.S. Supreme Court.
The oath that I have solemnly taken tonight means at its core that I will do my job without any fear or favor, and that I will do so independently of both the political branches and of my own preferences.
With just 7 days now until the end of voting in this year's presidential race, this is the first time a justice has been confirmed this close to an election. We're talking now about last night's vote and taking a look at the politics of the Supreme Court and the confirmation process. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the much anticipated decision last night by the Senate to confirm Judge Barrett? Do you think that it should have held off till after Election Day or Inauguration Day? What are your hopes and or fears for what the new court could bring? Call in at 800-642-1234. And you vote based in part on who is going to get nominated to the Supreme Court. Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Ryan Owens is with us, professor of political science and affiliate faculty at the UW Law School. He studies law, courts, and American political institutions. Ryan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You bet.
Well, no surprise here, a almost completely party line vote in the U.S. Senate. What do you think about the process that got us here, first of all?
Well, it's a fairly typical political process. I know there's a lot of thunder and lightning about this particular nomination and in the process in which it occurred. But frankly, it's a standard political process that we've seen in the past, certainly not this close to the election, but in a political process. And when a president of one party and a Senate of that same party are in control, this is what we see more often than not.
And what do you think this is going to mean for some of the big issues that are going to be coming to the court over the next couple of weeks and over the next year or so?
Well, I think the real question is just the long game. I know that Senate Democrats focused a lot on the Affordable Care Act and the confirmation process, frankly, because I think they didn't have a whole lot else to go on in terms of her confirmation, her background. And I think they wanted to try to score political points for the election, and that was a good issue for them. But really, I think when we talk about these nominations and confirmations, we really have to think about the long term here. And I think, she will be I suspect she will be a fairly humble justice. She'll probably, follow the text as it's written. I don't see her as somebody who is going to jump out immediately and try to take down precedents that she might disagree with. I think she will be a fairly steady, moderately conservative justice on the court.
A big question in these hearings is, I think everybody in the public and a lot of people in the Senate want to know how a judge is going to vote on issues. And that's the one thing that nominee wants to talk about. And they want to talk about, more the what you were just talking about, the attitude toward how to interpret the Constitution. Does it end up feeling, not just with disappointment, a little unsatisfying to not get what people, I think, mostly want to hear?
Well, I mean, the whole thing is, it's tricky, it's complex. Democrats in this instance wanted to know, how are you going to vote in this case? And she said, I'm not going to tell you. In previous nominations, Republicans want to know the same thing. Everybody feigns indignation. And it's just sort of nonsense. Really, I think, I should say, I think the concern about not wanting to show, a bias one way or the other on behalf of the nominee, I think that's actually a good thing. I understand people are worried about it getting out of hand, but I certainly think that's a good thing. But there are plenty of questions that senators could ask during these procedures, like, what do you believe the proper role of a law clerk is? How do you believe justices should interpret foreign sources of law? Somebody brought that in at one point. What do you think about the judicial hierarchy? Questions like that, I think, are not specific to particular cases, but nevertheless shed light on a particular justice and how they view their role in the judiciary.
I want to give a listen to Republican Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri talking about Amy Coney Barrett's nomination and one big issue that people will be watching for, I'm sure. Here's a listen.
The nomination of Amy Coney Barrett is truly historic. This is the most openly pro-life judicial nominee to the Supreme Court in my lifetime. This is an individual who has been open in her criticism of that illegitimate decision, Roe versus Wade.
And this Roe versus Wade has been a big bone of contention, obviously a big prize, I think, for people trying to overturn it. Do you see it being opened up for reconsideration at some point? A lot of states are passing laws that could take us there. Is that something you're watching for?
Not in the short run. I think her personal predilections are definitely pro-life, and that's fine. I mean, there are many millions of conservatives each year who go to the polls for that particular reason. The question, I think, is whether or not she's going to get on the court and immediately try to, reverse existing precedent out there. I don't see that happening. I can see in the midterm, maybe long term, they pick at the edges a little bit of Roe versus Wade. Maybe down the road they'll reconsider it or something. But I don't see this as something that's going to happen immediately. Much to the fear of many people, I just don't see it happening in the short run here.
We're talking to Wisconsin political scientist Ryan Owens from UW's Law School, looking at last night's confirmation of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the U.S. Supreme Court. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the process, the issues before the court? What are your thoughts on the legal opinions of Judge Coney Barrett and the impact she might have on the court? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with UW-Madison political scientist Ryan Owens. Last night, President Trump's third nominee to the Supreme Court was confirmed by the Senate. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the confirmation, the timing, the issues it could affect, and how it affects the presidential race, whether it affects your vote in a presidential race? You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. To your calls we go. Willem is with us in Colfax. Willem, hi.
Hi, hello. I kind of reject the term pro-life myself. I think it's about a woman's right to choose what to do with her own body, and that seems like a fundamental right of an individual to control their own person. So, and who's anti-life? So I reject the term pro-life, and I don't agree either that this is a moderately conservative justice when people have reported that she is as conservative, if not more so, than former Supreme Court Judge Scalia, who was considered very conservative. So, and then to do this while there's an election taking place, 50 million people have already voted before they confirm this justice. This is historic for reasons of sheer power, just power. This is not what the American people want. Before, they are always,
Willem, I gotcha. You gave us a lot to work with there. First of all, where she falls on the conservativeness scale of Supreme Court justices, Ryan, I've seen different people try to put that, to measure that. What do we know about that?
Well, the thing is, you can't know yet, because being a circuit court judge is fundamentally different than being a Supreme Court justice. You have to follow precedent. You're bound by your own circuit's rules. So, she has not had, I don't want to say a free hand, but she's not had the ability to act like a justice. And so we just don't know. A lot of times you put people on the court. I can remember back when everybody thought David Souter was going to be this reflexive right winger, and look what happened there. So you have to take those, shrieks with a grain of salt. Now, as to the historic thing, millions of people have voted, this has to wait. I mean, I can certainly understand why people think that way, but look, the fact of the matter is, when you have control of the reins of government, you implement those. And, it's difficult, because what are you supposed to do? Let's say you're the president, right? And there's an election coming around. I mean, you're not going to hobble yourself and say, well, I'm not going to make a decision right now because people are going to go to the polls in a few months. Where does that line get drawn where, oh, gosh, it's so close to the election, we can't act? To think that a party in this situation would not do, what Republicans did here, I think is just crazy. Democrats, had they had their druthers, they would do the same thing. And if you look back on history, as I said earlier, parties have done this in the past. This is absolutely commonplace. And, during the confirmation hearings, we heard a lot of senators say, this process is a sham. It's illegitimate. That is absolutely wrong. It's false. You know, I think Democrats oftentimes attack President Trump for his comments about the potential illegitimacy of an election and say that that's not helpful. I also think that, you know, Senate Democrats, when they attack this process as being illegitimate itself, was very, very unhelpful. It's just politics. You may not like it, but that doesn't make it illegitimate.
I think the critique was Republicans who had said with Merrick Garland, don't do this months before an election. And yes, it was divided government. But I don't think there's that asterisk. They said, don't do it in a presidential election year. I think like Democrats have really highlighted that contrast.
Yeah, right. So, you know, what they could have done then is they could have just pushed the nomination through and then they could have excoriated him. You know, in the confirmation hearings, it could have trumped up things and, you know, engaged in a personal assassination of him to strike it down. I don't think that would have been helpful either. The fact of the matter is just historically, if you look at this, when you have divided government during this time period, the confirmation process, you know, slows down. Joe Biden did the same thing in 1991. This is just how it works. And people aren't I think they haven't studied history enough to know that this happens. And so they're very keen to buy into the argument that this is brand new and, you know, a revolutionary and the like. I mean, I can certainly understand why people are upset on the left that Republicans are going to get a third nomination. But again, that doesn't make the process illegitimate. It just makes it a process that you dislike.
Let's go back to our callers. Saul is with us in Stevens Point. Saul, hi.
Hi, how are you? I totally disagree with your guest, Dr. Owen's evaluation of this justice. I think she is a Joan of Arc. I think she has a mission. Think about it. She went to all kinds of very seemly or seamy events featuring her as a prize catch and knowing all the political hopes that were put upon her, still went through the process. And the Supreme Court is supposed to be the ultimate forum for fairness. Now, there can be great disagreement about what's fair or not, but it's about fairness. And so she put herself into this cauldron of political sliminess, and I think that's because she feels that she has a mission, and she's going to...
Thanks a lot for the call. Saul thinks she, Ryan, will have a much bigger impact and want to make an impact soon.
Yeah. So, I mean, the notion, you know, that she I'm not sure what Saul is talking about with, you know, seamy events. Her background looks exactly like all recent nominees to the high court. So I'm not sure precisely what he's talking about there. But I do think, you know, she will have an effect on the court. Right. I mean, the conservatives for a very long time have been stymied first by, you know, a Lewis Powell, then a Sandra Day O'Connor, Anthony Kennedy, and then, you know, John Roberts. And right now, the median looks as though it has shifted over to Brett Kavanaugh for most issues, potentially Neil Gorsuch on others. And so I think that we are going to see some distinctions here. I think, you know, the administrative state is something that could be potentially under reconsideration at this point. How much deference do we give to executive agencies? That's one thing that might come under consideration. I do think it's likely that the court may look at, you know, affirmative action policies and race-based policies that are out there right now. We'll just have to see. I mean, if Democrats take over the House, the Senate, and the presidency, the court may have to sort of, you know, tread water for a couple of years and not, you know, not want to go too far to the right for fear of potential backlash from the political branches. But we will have to see on that.
Time for another caller. Bill is with us in Elgin, Illinois. Bill, hi.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I do see what Saul was saying, and he made a very legitimate point. But the point that I was going to make is this. You have liberal and Democrat. You have liberal and conservative. Each wants to stymie the other. And let's look at this situation here. Mitch McConnell refused to allow the voice of the people to go forward when Barack Obama had an opportunity to see the justice. My question to you then becomes this. If it means so much, dependent upon if a justice is placed by a liberal or a Democrat, doesn't that water down what is supposed to be called a law? Isn't a law like the law of gravity? It doesn't matter what happens. The law of gravity is the law. So water down what we consider the law.
Bill, thanks for the call. I think I see what you're getting at. How much wiggle room do justices have to impose an ideology in their interpretation of the law and, I guess, of the Constitution, Ryan?
Yeah. Well, I think Bill makes a good point here. And, you know, that point is that, honestly, we're asking too much of courts these days. I think if you went back in history and, you know, you talked to people 200 years ago and told them about how much authority we've given to courts to decide some of the most pressing political issues of the day, they would be absolutely astonished and frightened. You know, we do ask courts to resolve many, many issues right now that ought probably to be left to the political branches. And I think, you know, everybody is starting to see that now when we have these vacancies on the court and all hell breaks loose because, you know, one party's got to get their person on board. You know, that's kind of a problem, right? It suggests that everybody knows that these courts are answering the biggest questions of the day rather than us, the voters. And I think that's something that we should all be very, weary about.
Thanks for the call. And Ryan, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Hey, you bet. Thanks a lot.
That's Ryan Owens, professor of political science and affiliate faculty at the UW Law School. Ryan studies the law, courts, and American political institutions. He joins us today for a look at Judge Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation, now Justice Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation to the U.S. Supreme Court. WPR and Wisconsin Watch are documenting the lives of Wisconsinites in this unprecedented time with an ongoing series of audio diaries called Outbreak Wisconsin. Wisconsin has seen a record number of COVID-19 related hospitalizations in the past 2 weeks. Dozens of patients are currently hospitalized in Dane County alone. While those numbers rose rapidly, they were also predictable, something ER nurse Mariah Clark reflected on after a seemingly slow day at work in late September.
It's the morning of September 25th, and a few days ago, I had one of the better shifts I'd had in a long time. We had enough staffing that I could spend time with a couple of patients, and there was a person who was just overwhelmed with the events of the world, and instead of just going through their discharge instructions and escorting them out and wishing them a good day and that they'd feel better, I sat with them for a little bit of extra time and talked about a time in my life when I had been overwhelmed and overwrought. One of the reasons I got into medicine was because I knew that it gave me the opportunity to really make a difference, whether that was by some dramatic life-saving, you know, bringing someone from the brink of death and seeing them walk out of the hospital weeks later, or whether it was by sitting with someone quietly. And that's amazing. I mean, it's really amazing. But even with all that, things are still getting busier. And, you know, I was listening to an NPR piece as I got ready for work the other day, and it was beautifully reflective. It was talking about the beginning of the pandemic, and people were talking about cheering healthcare workers or listening to stories of healthcare workers adapting, changing roles, sitting with people, facilitating family chats on tablets because families couldn't be at the bedsides of the sick. And part of me felt what they were going for, you know, that heartwarming note. And part of me was just aggravated because they were talking about it like it was past tense, like we are not still having iPad conversations with families and patients, like we are not bringing up end-of-life wishes, like we are not reusing single-use PPE. People are talking about it like it's past, and I assure you, whether you want to listen to me, or whether you want to look at the data, or whether you want to see the lines on my face from my mask, or how sweaty I am after spending hours on end at a patient bedside, suctioning them and changing them and medicating them and comforting them. There's got to be a change, y'all. This is slowly grinding us into dirt. We could be enjoying a regular autumn. And instead, the pandemic is at its highest rate that it's been. We can do better. We need to do better. There's no excuse not to.
To hear more stories from this series, visit WPR.org/outbreakWisconsin.